Hello, and welcome to the second of three exciting NABBW teleseminars that we are hosting this month. In a moment, I will introduce tonight's guest, Tina Sloan, the glamorous actress perhaps best known for having played Nurse Lillian Raines for 26 years on the venerable daytime TV drama, I don't want to call it a soap opera, so I'll go with TV drama, Guiding Lives. But first, let me introduce myself and do a bit of housekeeping. For those of you who do not know me, I am Ann Holmes, the Boomer in Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online at www.nabbw.com. And we also have a forum at Boomer Women Speak, which is pretty much spelled like it sounds, so I won't take time to spell that one out. Our websites are the number one sites found on the major search engines when you put in the keywords baby boomer women. If you're not a member of the NABBW, and I know that a number of you on the call are not, you are welcome to join us. You'll find a handy link on the front page of the NABBW site, which you can use to join. Tonight's teleseminar is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We have approximately 70 teleseminars, which we've done in the past, which are available via written transcript and audio recording. These are yours with membership in NABBW. You won't see them if you're not a member, however, because we have them archived in the members-only area. I mentioned that we're doing three teleseminars this month, so just a quick word on that. Last week we spoke with Barbara Hollis on Pursuing Your Passion. Next week, on the 30th, we will be talking to children's author Tina Turbin on a passion of hers, increasing awareness of celiac disease in baby boomers. And then in October, we have three more great topics, including Lynn Tolson speaking on domestic violence, Dr. Dori Lynn on her new book, Sex for Grownups, and another author, Mary Beth Azard, on the growing trend of what she calls boomerpreneurship, which is baby boomers starting their own businesses. I do hope that you will watch for news on how to join us for these calls as well. Now let me tell you a little bit about how the format of the call will go today. I will have the honor of introducing the legendary Tina Sloan in a moment, and we will spend about 30 minutes discussing her book, Changing Shoes, and how she's used shoes as a metaphor for the changes we make in our lives as time passes. During this first part of the call, you will be in listen-only mode, so sit back, relax, and get comfortable. Close the door if you have to so that no one will bother you, because I know you won't want to miss a thing. After that, we'll open the call for your questions, and I hope that you will have a lot of them, because the third listener to ask Tina a question will win an autographed copy of her book, Changing Shoes. Now, if you hear me announce your name as the winner, please stay on the line after the call ends so that I can get your address and so we can get that book to you. There are two ways for you to ask questions. Either type them in to the question box on your computer screen, or we'll open the lines and let you ask them in person. Now, because we only have 45 minutes and I don't want to delay further, please allow me to introduce Tina Sloan, actress, author, and playwright, and we'll launch right into our discussion. Tina made her first appearance on soap operas in the 1970s as the sex kitten on Somerset, and hit it big when she was cast as Nurse Lillian Raines on Guiding Light, a role she played for 26 years until it aired its final episode in 2009. During that time, we watched as her costumes slowly changed from sexy nurse outfits complete with high heels to dowdy sweaters, scrubs, and sneakers. At the same time, her role transitioned from playing the young starlet to the mother of the star and later the star's grandmother. From depleted storylines to transitioning from sizzling screen diva to mature grandmother, Tina has proved that women of all ages can have style and flair. While many women hide our signs of aging with tight clothes, heavy makeup, and plastic surgery, 67-year-old Guiding Light legend Tina Sloan has learned to welcome each phase of her life with effortless grace and doing this all in the public eye. Tina, welcome to the call today.
Thank you so much. What a lovely thing you're saying about me there, Anne.
Oh,
I appreciate
sure.
it.
I just loved your book. I had a chance to read an early copy of it, and this past week I was reading over some of my favorite parts, and I'm delighted that you decided that you had something to say and transitioned from actress into author. Before I launch into my questions, why don't I give you an opportunity to say anything that you'd like to about your book?
Well, I wrote Changing Shoes because I was trying to find role models. And you and I were discussing this a few minutes ago. I remember thinking, because I'm older than probably most of your listeners who are baby boomers. I wrote this for baby boomers because there was nobody out ahead of me to discuss, to tell me how to take care of my parents. There was nobody out ahead of me that I could find to tell me how to age gracefully, how to dress, how to, you know, keep my face looking good, how to keep my body looking good. I mean, just when I thought I had it all together, my body would change and I'd have to start figuring it out all over again. And I remember one of the things, my mother had a birthday party. I think she might have even been 90. And I just noticed nobody paid any attention to her at all. I'll never forget it. I mean, we all go, oh, Mommy, it's so good to see you, and give her kisses and whatever. But I noticed that people who were older were sort of put on the outside at parties, where when we were younger, you know, my mother was, we'd all come to Christmas and we'd all be around my mother. And now as she aged, she was being put more and more in the background. And I thought about how, you know, we were the ones who were getting married and we were the ones having children. And all of a sudden, it's our children who are getting married and they're having children. We're the mother-in-law or the mother of the bride. And how do you act and how do you get through this with grace? I mean, you know, some people want to steal that limelight. One friend of mine, I'll never forget this. She said, oh, I have this great dress for my son's wedding. And she showed it to me, and it was so open and décolleté that, you know, you could see everything. I said, Patsy, you cannot wear this because you're upstaging your daughter-in-law-to-be, who's
right.
the bride. You,
mm-hmm.
you know, or people who wear really, you know, they just want to still be the star. And it's really hard not to be the star anymore. And I certainly went through the diminishment on the show and obviously in life. And I really wrote this book thinking, okay, I'm going to share this with the generation after me so they have somewhere to look. And I do think more and more people are wanting to share this information because we're all living longer and we see the problems.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my, and it's sort of in line with what you're doing with these conversations. Everyone you were talking about, I thought, ooh, I want to listen to that. I want to listen to that. That's interesting.
Oh, good. Well, you are a member, so you're certainly welcome to, if you've got time in your schedule, because I've seen that you have plays going on here for a few
right.
months, and
right.
and I'm sure lots of other things, but we'd love to have you listen in.
Thank you.
Now, you talked about how this happened to you, but was it hard for you to make the transition to decide that you wanted to write it down to become an author, because that hadn't been something, authoring had not been something that you'd done before?
Well, I, of course, you know, going through menopause, I was up all night. every night. And I thought, well, what am I going to do with this? And in the beginning, I watched TV, and I ate a lot. And then I started thinking about this. And I was, as I said, I was dealing with my mom and dad and with being sidelined on the show, of course,
uh-huh.
Just like my mother, nobody paying any attention. I thought, well, I'll just start writing. And it just spilled out of me because it – my friends would say to me, they'd come to me and they'd say, well, what do we do about sex at our age? Or they'd come to me and they'd go, well, what, you know, what should I do about my parents not getting a living will or a power of attorney? Or they'd come to me and say, you know, how do I look, make my skin stay alive? What makeup? And they're using the wrong makeup. They're using makeup for teenagers, not makeup
mm-hmm.
for, you know, there are makeup lines for people our age. And in Changing Shoes, my book, you know, I describe all these different makeups you should use. And I describe how using an eyelash curler and how you do it opens your eyes up and how you should whiten your teeth and all these things I learned from 26 years of being with great makeup artists, you know. So It sort of morphed into more than just taking care of your parents and how to do that. It became beauty, and it became in-laws, and it became, you know, stepchildren or children growing up and going off, and it just sort of poured out of me. I mean, I worked on it for years, and I'd used, of course, the metaphor of changing shoes to do it, because you do change your shoes as you get older.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is absolutely true, and in fact, I was going to start with my next question, saying that you use shoes as a starting point to talk about the different areas of your life. You talk about, you know, the transition from the sexy high heels to the flats. And could you tell us a little bit about that transition for you? What was it like, and do you still wear heels?
I've had them on today, as a matter of fact. Well, little kitten heels, little tiny bright orange kitten heels.
Oh, sounds like fun.
Oh, they were. They were great fun. And they're open in the back because I don't know, I find it's more comfortable to have them open somewhere, you know, and I have a strap around the back. But I wear high heels occasionally. Generally speaking, if they're too high, they really do hurt my feet and my back. And sometimes I don't care and I'll just defy everybody and the next day I'll pay for it. But I remember during this period, this sort of going through menopause, and I was in the black flats every day with the Dr. Scholl's insets, and they were getting scuffy and worn out. And I remember thinking, what happened to me? You know, and it was by looking down at my feet that I realized what had happened to me.
Uh-huh.
And I remember my son, when he was in Iraq, he was telling me how he was out in the desert one time, and he looked down at his combat boots, and he said, I could hear your voice saying, don't give up, keep taking one step after another. And it was 135 degrees, and he just didn't know if he was going to make it. Uh-huh. And he said those words, and he used the shoes. He happened to glance at his combat boots, keep putting one foot in front of the other. And I think we all, as we get older, everyone's going to have trouble. I mean, nobody's going to escape having parents get older. Nobody's going to escape having children cause them heartache in some form, unless they're just so blessed. No one's going to, you know, not have a husband home from work. I mean, my husband has now moved from his office into our apartment to work. And, you know, he just did this a month ago, and I'm telling you, I know a lot of men are out of work now, and this is a huge thing for the baby boomers to be going through.
It really is. I know with my sister, who's 2 years younger than I am, and her husband is 10 years older than she is, she's told me that she's petrified of the fact that he will retire and come home from work and she works. I mean, she's a curator of a museum, so she is out of the house, and I think she's trying to work as long as she can, because I think that is, you know, despite the fact that they've had a 30 or 40 some year marriage, I think she has no idea what it's going to be like to have him home all the time.
And I think some people, one of my good friends, I'll never forget, she said her husband moved home, and she said all of a sudden he said to me, I don't like those earrings. She said he had never noticed anything I'd worn in my, you know, a 40-year marriage or a 30-year marriage. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden he's critiquing the way I dress.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Steve, my husband, his name's Steve,
mm-hmm.
and Steve came home, and we have a den, and he moved in that, and that's his office. And he's very funny. He'll say, well, I'm going to my office now, and he'll go in and close the door, and he'll come out and say, I'm coming out of my office. And at night he'll say, now I'm in the den. You know, it's no longer mm-hmm. the office when he's watching television or something. But it is a huge, huge shakeup, mm-hmm. and I'm working on changing shoes, and I'm working on the play. And I'm home all the time now. I'm not on Guiding Light. So there we both are in an apartment in New York City. And I know right now so many men are not only retired, but out of work in this economy. And they're home, and it's hard on them. And I was thinking today, I was driving down from Boston with my husband. And I was thinking how I'm talking about myself all the time because of the book and the play. And, you know, right at this moment, it's very important. Changing Shoes has just been out for a week. And it's a really important time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I'm thinking, oh, dear, I'm not paying any attention to him. And I remember I stopped in the middle of the conversation and I started talking about him. And had he still been in the office, I wouldn't have felt the need to do that. Does
mm-hmm.
that make sense?
Yes.
But because he was home, I was worried that it's such a big jolt to his pride
mm-hmm.
that I have to be careful with him. And I think we all have to be careful probably with our husbands because they're used to being the breadwinners, and maybe they're not going to be if they're out of work now because of the economy. I mean, this is, I think, terrifying.
Oh, I think so. I have a daughter and son-in-law who are in their 30s, and they're both journalists. They met through working for a newspaper, and now they both work, or he's been out of work actually for about 18 months now, but they both were working when they were both working at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as editors. He was a sports editor and she's a news editor, and she's continued to have a job, but he is working on a blog and hoping that the blog is going to turn into something. And I know that she says it's really changed the dynamic of their relationship because, you know, as much as they are treating each other as equals and there are no children involved. But she said, you know, it's just such a hard thing for his ego even though they
so
he wasn't the only breadwinner. They were both working,
mm-hmm.
but still the fact that he's not been doing that is a huge challenge for people.
Oh, I think in our society, no matter what people say, are all societies, the male is the breadwinner, or has been, historically, obviously not any longer, because we all you're working, I'm working, everybody's working.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think it's in the male gene to think of himself this way. And, you know, you're going to resent the person who's taking care of you if you're a male. It's going to be hard on their marriage. It has to be.
Right.
And, you know, I often think in things like that. I wonder if I was the breadwinner, the only breadwinner. I think I'd put my money into it. I'd say I'd put money into his account for six, if I had it, for
mm-hmm.
a month or at a time, so that he never had to ask me for money. Because
mm-hmm.
I think that would be so awkward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can I have the money to grocery shop? Well, that's the problem. You just have to say, you know, here's the money for the month. Can you take care of this for me or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know quite how you do that, but I think there probably is an art, and that would be a great book, really, on how not to hurt someone's feelings. And also, I suppose, when a woman isn't working anymore and she's used to bringing in money like all of the Guiding Light actresses.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were the breadwinners. I wasn't, but most of them were, or were brought in most of the money.
Right.
It's a big, huge jolt to their egos that they're not on the show anymore and they're not bringing in the money. So
oh,
I think it goes both ways.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're right. Well, I know we could talk about this for a long time, but keeping in mind that our time and I have lots of questions, so I'm going to go in a different direction here, Tina, if you don't mind, and ask you, you know, some of my favorite parts of the books were your stories like when you climb Mount Kilimanjaro and and some of these other adventures that you had running marathons in Paris, for example. So I'm curious as to whether you have any more mountains that you'd like to climb, and how do you stay active these days?
To be honest with you, Anne, I'd love to tell you that I was doing yoga up till about 2 months ago, almost three times a week, and going in the park and walking with friends because we'd all gossip and have just this wonderful time. But the last month or two, I've been working nonstop, and I now understand women who say, I don't have time to exercise,
mm-hmm.
because I really don't. I keep thinking, well, I can probably get up an hour earlier and go walk in the park, but I'm so tired that I don't.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, I think of these women who go to work and have children, and there isn't – I don't know how you do get that in. I think you have to really, really make it your top priority, and that's what the people who stay fit say. That comes first. Nothing else gets in the way of that hour of exercise every day. And I would say I did that until literally this book just took over – Changing Shoes just sort of took
mm-hmm.
over my life, and I just didn't – I couldn't breathe because the play was coming out at the same time.
Right. Oh, well, I saw your schedule, and I thought, wow, she's got the book and the play coming out in the same week. I was thinking, well, in one way, that's really cool because it really, you know, pulls it all together in one big, exciting event that, you know, is sure to capture a lot of people's interest. But on the other hand, there is that part where how do you get all of that done and still have that time? So I'm sure, knowing you, that you will find a way to get back to your...
Oh, I think there's no question, and I do think walking. I had an aunt who died at 89. She was in the best shape of anybody I've ever known in my life, and she always walked up the stairs instead of taking elevators, but she walked everywhere, and every day until the last 4 or 5 years of her life, she walked 7 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
And her skin was great. She was always in a good mood. You know, it just gives you everything. And she used to say to me, that's all you need to do is walk. Your body's getting heavy. It's like lifting weights because it has the weight of your own body as the weights that you're lifting
mm-hmm.
as you're walking around. So your legs stay in great shape. And somebody once, I read somewhere that you have to keep your feet and your eyes as you get older, that those are the things to really take good care of. And you take good care of your feet by using good shoes, you know, by having good sneakers and changing them. I mean, you can't just wear the same pair. You're supposed to have two pairs of shoes and change them every day. I don't know what, but supposedly that's better for your feet. And I know I'll go back to, and I also love walking because I love being with my friends and chatting, whether it's
mm-hmm.
politics or books we've read or movies or talking about one another's children or friends or whatever. It's just so much fun to be out there with your friends.
Oh, I know that you must talk about those things, because when you talked about the marathon in Paris, you talked about, well, we're going to discuss this from these minutes from, or these miles, and then we'll talk about this.
That's
You had the whole thing all planned out, who would talk about what to keep you going.
To keep
us
going.
That's so important with that marathon, because, you know, I have never run a marathon, but
it's not too late, Anne.
But people tell me that you get to that point where you feel like you've hit that wall and you have to keep yourself going. And
but did you see that I did hit the wall, and I hated the girl I was with? She kept wanting to talk about other things, and I just hated her, because I'd hit it, and she was happy and frolicking around from 23, 4 miles for the last 2 miles, and I was just beside myself. I couldn't even it took everything in me to put one foot in front of the other, which, of course, is the answer to life, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's such a simple thing and so hard to understand that it's what we have to do. Well, there are other things that you write about in the book that I'd love to talk about, and so let me keep us going here. First of all, you talk about your son. Now, you've mentioned Rennie earlier, but in his time in Iraq, but would you talk a little bit about him and your relationship with him?
Well, he's the love of my life. I think most mommies say that. He's my only child. I would have loved to have had lots of children, but I just wasn't given them. Mm-hmm. So he's just, I mean, he was so important in my life. And he's now grown up. He called me today to see how he goes, Mom, how's Changing Shoes doing? And he's so interested and so proud of me in a very quiet way. I think there's something about a boy who goes into the Marines or the Army or the Navy or goes into the service that they're quieter, or at least in my son is quieter. Mm-hmm. Then he doesn't jump around and go, oh, Mom, this is great. You know, how's Changing Shoes? He'll just say, the book's doing well. I'm glad, Mom. But he checks in all the time. It's just so endearing. And he's this summer, he's at Harvard Business School. He got out of the Marines 2 or 3 years ago. And he's at Harvard Business School, and he decided to do a startup, don't they all, this summer.
Yes. Well,
and
of course, because there's so many wonderful stories of Harvard startups that have gone so well. You know, they want to be the next one.
Well, he was doing it because of his time in Iraq, because of cyber defense. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that people could come and turn a switch and our computers are gone, our telephones are gone, our lights are gone, or we can't open the garage to get our cars out, our refrigerators are gone. And I gather this happened in Brazil. They don't know who did it. I know who they think did it, but another country. And they took this little tiny town of Brazil, I can't remember the name of it, out for about a week. And I guess they were checking, this country was trying to see if they could do it, and they succeeded. And this was so terrifying to people like my son, who was doing intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Certainly it would be.
Oh, I mean, just think about what anyone could do, an enemy, whoever it might be.
Right.
So he was working with two other boys who were in the Marines, who went to Harvard also, undergraduate, and are either at the Kennedy School or at Harvard Business School, about finding the really good people who are the tech people who are doing these startups that will be good for us for defense, because they're not going into the government. They're going into tech places where they can make money.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to hook them up with the Defense Department. Anyway, he was working where I was working on the dining room table all summer, and he wouldn't say anything. We both work. My husband's in the den. It was just lovely. I mean, we were all home.
All three of you working.
But it was so, I look back on this summer and having him there, and he wouldn't say anything, but every now and then I have a darling little assistant who was working with me, and he'd all of a sudden say, Emily, you know, you and Mom should, if I was out of the room. And it was always just such a smart idea.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me marketing ideas for Changing Shoes. And he just was so, it was just so wonderful, especially when I hadn't had him home in so many years, to have him right in that dining room every day. He often was with his girlfriend at the night, and then he'd come in the morning like he was coming into a job at the dining room table.
Oh, that's so delightful.
Yeah.
Now, another side of your family that you talked about in the book was caring for your parents, and we all are realizing that we might have thought that our caregiving days were done when our kids grew up, but that is not true.
No.
And many of us are challenged by the situations with our parents, especially it's not easy for us whether they live far away or whether they live close. So I would certainly love for you to share with some of our listeners some of your advice on what others might, how they could benefit from what you learned in caring for your parents.
Well, this, as I said, was why I wrote Changing Shoes, because I was taking care of my mother and father, who were in their 80s. And all of a sudden, I realized that things weren't in order, that there was no power of attorney. In other words, there was no one, if they died, there was, or mm-hmm. my father died, there was no one to write the checks, because my mother was senile and had no idea
right.
about anything. So there was no one to write the checks. So I needed to get my father's power of attorney, and I needed to get my mother's power of attorney. And this should have been done, and this is something I suggest in the book, that you, when your parents are still young enough, get them to do it before they think they're about to die, because they don't want to do it. They mm-hmm. don't want to get things out of control. You know, they don't want to hand over, and I'm not saying they should hand over their money to you when they're young, but at least have it ready. At least mm-hmm. talk to them about having a power of attorney. Talk to them about having a living will. Some people don't want to be kept alive on those machines.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, you need to have it in writing ahead of time. You can't
otherwise you're
on the machine.
Right.
Yes, and you know, that costs you and the world and so much financially, which your mm-hmm. parents don't want you to be spending because they're in comas or something.
Right.
And my mother didn't know what she was doing, but my father certainly didn't want to be kept alive, and he really insisted on this. So I took them to, and I had to have my father change his will, because he left the money to my mother, and my mother would have spent it on Ferraris or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was so senile that she didn't know who I was. And so the idea that the money was going to her, people don't check on these things.
Exactly.
No one's aware of this. I went and made a will. I made a living will. I did a power of attorney, even though I was in my late 50s when I was beginning mm-hmm. to write this. But all of these, there are so many. I list in the book all of the things you have to do. And, you know, I started as I was going through each thing, like when my parents died. Before they died, my brother and my sister had died in her 40s. So my brother, my sister's daughter, and myself, and we went through the furniture, and we told our parents, or I told Daddy, Mother didn't know,
mm-hmm.
that we were going to write who was going to get what. And we drew lots for the mm-hmm. first one, for the second one, for the third one, and we'd pick what we were going to get, so that when they died, there was no fighting or no, you know, and we went and showed them to my father, and he agreed with everything. But at least we dealt with some of the things that were so painful after they died, because you were so lost without them.
Right.
And we dealt with, I remember I knew my father was, he was in really bad shape, and I went and saw a priest, I'm Catholic, and, you know, we did worked out the funeral. I got them a plots in the cemetery. They were all things that you don't think about.
Right.
I got the stone organized for mm-hmm. when they were dead, so that I didn't have to do it when I was in real, real pain, although that was pretty painful to do anyway. But it was wonderful that it was done. I just worked on so many things that people, I asked my parents, do you want to be cremated? You have to ask these questions of your parents. And the younger they are when you ask them, if you say, where would you like to be buried? Well, if you're young, you don't mind talking about
because
that.
Because you don't think it's going
to
happen
to you, right. But if you wait till they're older, it's really difficult to get an answer from them. I mean, and I had my aunt, my uncle had died, and she had no children, and so this was my mother's sister. So she was the third person, and they all died within a few months of each other. So it was like juggling. But fortunately, I had taken a lot of these things and gotten them done. I learned about long-term health care insurance. Had my mother and father had that, they wouldn't have used all their money up on health, you know, on their...
Right. Mm-hmm.
And as Daddy said, I never thought I'd live to be 91 years old. This is when he was in his 90s. And he said, I didn't plan this far out, and I feel terrible because, you know, I was supporting him because I just didn't plan. And so I think there's that kind of planning. And now, of course, with no money in the economy, I don't know how people can put money aside for their old age, because we're all going to be working till we're 90.
Right.
And that's another thing, isn't it,
mm-hmm.
which that we have to transition and get other jobs. And I talk about that in the book. I mean, I don't care if you love movies, you can work in a movie theater, you
mm-hmm.
know, what it, or a library if you love books. But I think we have to start thinking as baby boomers about the next step in our lives. Literally, here I am changing shoes again.
Mm-hmm.
But where our feet will take us for the next step in our lives.
Excellent. I agree with that. Well, I have some questions related to the changing shoes, but I don't want to get myself off my track here. So let me ask you, my next question that I had in mind from the book was, you talk in the book about aging and your requirements as an actress to look the best that you possibly can. And certainly that story that you told of you and Beth Chamberlain going into the coffee shop. Well, you start the book out with that, so you grab everyone's attention with that story. But as we age, we are bombarded with advertising for creams and makeup and the possibility of Botox and plastic surgery. I think that our audience here would love to hear what you think about all of this.
Well, I personally don't believe in plastic surgery. And as a matter of fact, Beth Chamberlain has often says, you know, she would have done it if it hadn't been for me saying, why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is my own. If someone wants to do it, I don't think it's bad. I just think that's sort of money, and that it scares me. It scares me to go under a knife personally. And, you know, I've seen facelifts that are terrible. And
well, that's one of the things that I find scary is, you know, as much as you think that you could search and find the most qualified plastic surgeon, that still doesn't guarantee that you will have a good outcome, at least from my knowledge.
No, a friend of mine got sick to her stomach from the anesthesia, and it ruined her facelift. She had the best surgeon on earth, but she was allergic to something in the anesthesia. So there are these, and people die.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not many, but
right.
To me, that's not where I'd rather go to Egypt with that money or send my kid to school for 2 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just personally don't see it. And I think there's something just beautiful about women and men as they get, because you see men having facelifts,
mm-hmm.
about women as they age. And, you know, I don't mind my wrinkles. They just don't bother me. They're there. And when I first saw them, I will tell you, I was stunned. But now I've grown into them, but I've gotten used to them. Maybe that's it. I don't see. Maybe my eyesight's gotten so bad I don't see them. maybe that's the good news about getting older. I don't know. But I lost my train of thought there.
Well, we were talking about the creams and makeup and.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
In the book, in Changing Shoes, I do discuss. I found creams. I mean, I found the makeup that was for aging skin.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, the ads on TV are for young skin. They're not for skin 50 and up. But there
mm-hmm.
are, I mean, like I use one example is Lauren Hutton. I think personally she's my age, so she has great ideas for. She made these makeups
mm-hmm.
For older women. And I think it's really important to get these creamier, better makeups because you want your skin not to look moist and to moisturize and do all of these things, which are, as I say in the book, one friend of mine she took a tally of how many hours she spent staying just the same, just to maintain her looks. And by this I mean, you know, shaving the legs, putting the mm-hmm. pedicure, the manicure, the hair color, the hair cuts, the putting on the massage, I mean, the getting massage or massaging the creams into your skin,
mm-hmm.
putting on face creams, putting on makeup, taking off the makeup, eating vitamins, exercising. I mean, I think she spent 104 hours a week. I mean, it was something so appalling.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, well, if I started adding it up, you know, let's say an hour of exercise, and then, all right, you have to get your hair looking right and your makeup. That could be another half hour. Every now and then you shave your legs. You know, it does add up. And I think we do want to do that because we want to keep – there's a power. I don't mean in being beautiful, but a power in being proud of how you're looking.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
And if you get up in the morning, and I know if I put makeup on, I feel so much better. And in Changing Shoes, I talk about how the day I got up and I didn't put makeup on and I didn't do my hair and I had on sweats and sneakers and I went outside and I saw the one who got away, you know, the man I didn't marry.
Right.
Or didn't marry me. And
mm-hmm.
he saw me and he hadn't seen me in 20 years. And there I was looking like, you know, just the worst possible image of myself imaginable. And I remember I went into the delicatessen to hide from him, and I was standing around the cantaloupes, you know, just hiding in the cantaloupes, and I looked like a cantaloupe. And he came in and said, "Tina, is that you?" And I remember thinking, oh, how could I have ever gone out of the house looking like this? And from that day on, I at least, you know, put on some rouge and some lipstick, because as you get older, you need to put some blush on your face. I mean, you know, or at least I do. My skin is white, and I put a little blush on, and I feel better about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I look in the mirror, and I go, oh, I have lipstick on. I go, oh, I don't look that bad. You know, I look okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that pride that we have to have in ourselves, I think, that
get
older. Yeah, you know, I didn't use Botox either, but the reason I didn't use that was, I remember the doctor, I said, tell me about Botox. And he said, well, if you're an actress, you want to show your emotions. And I was out in California with Beth Chamberlain. She was pitching a show. And somehow it came up that I hadn't had a facelift. And the whole group of producers out there stood up and gave me a standing ovation. And when I didn't use Botox, and I didn't, you know, I had made a choice to be who I was. And I've gotten movie parts because I look like who I am. Jodie Foster, I did a movie with Jodie Foster, and she, the makeup artist was saying, hey, you haven't had a facelift, when we were sitting next to each other getting makeup. And she turned around and she said, thank God there are women like you out there ahead of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me feel that I was doing the right thing, and that made me want to do the book, that chapter on looks in the book.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So these are ways that you would say that you are staying true to yourself.
Yes, I would say I'm staying true to myself. I'm not saying I haven't veered off and been untrue to myself. You know, I mean, we're all human, and therefore we're imperfect. But I color my hair, so that's not true to myself. I have white hair by now, so I color my hair. But other than that, I don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I put makeup on, but that's not exactly the same thing. I like the fact that I'm me. And I think there's a power for women who stay themselves. I really do. I don't care what you look like. If you look like yourself and you are yourself, there's something charming and to me and exciting about you. But if you pretend to be what you're not, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is the point not being who you are? I don't know what you gain from that, because you're not going to feel good inside. And I'm not trying to sound like a cliche, but you know, there was a French woman that I talk about in Changing Shoes in the book.
Yeah.
And she said to me, Tina, you must always follow your own feet. Never let other people tell you what shoes to wear. In other words, don't let other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's perfect, because, you know, these ads would have us all in those high, high, high heels that we can't wear.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to just listen to the voice inside you that says, this is where your feet are taking you.
Right.
They're not taking you to have a facelift. My feet aren't taking me to spend money like that. But they're taking me, hopefully, on trips around the world or whatever I want to invest in.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, now that Guiding Light is over, it sounds like you have a lot of projects going on, so you're certainly sounding like that you're not sitting around wondering what to do. How did you go about finding all of these avenues that allow you to stay creative?
I think I just am really creative. I'm aware more and more, and I think as we get older, and this is what I pointed out in the book too, I think women, as we get older, start doing more and more projects. Start finding, gardening. I just see these beautiful gardens. A friend of mine I saw today has this beautiful garden that she's working on. And, you know, people, it seems to me we get more creative, maybe because our creations, which are our children in great part, or our marriages or whatever, have found their keel, their even keel, and so we can embark on new projects. There's a part in Changing Shoes where David Halberstam, who was a Pulitzer Prize journalist, mentions how he goes back to his reunions. And every year he went to Harvard, the Radcliffe women start doing more and more and more as the years go by. And I thought that was so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I find, like, marketing this Changing Shoes, I'm having more fun dreaming up. I don't know if you've seen on YouTube That Book Gets Around.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. That was
isn't
so
that?
Fun.
I mean, that was just an idea that just popped into my mind. And I made these cute little bags. It says Changing Shoes. On one side is a black flat. On the other side is a high heel. And it says Changing Shoes on that side. And the idea is you can carry your shoes, you know, if you're going to a party in your black flats, you can carry your high heels or your if your feet are wet. But, you know, you can carry, if it's a rainy day or a snowy day, you can have your boots on but have your pretty shoes inside this little plastic bag.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm just having so much fun with these ideas that just pop in my head. And I think as we get older, probably over 50, we begin to let these things happen, and we begin to make them materialize and not just let them, you know, when you're taking care of raising your kids and doing working and taking care of your husband, you probably don't have the time to go paint the picture that you want to paint. But now you think, oh, I'm going to tap dance, or, oh, okay, now I'm going to take that cooking course or I've always wanted to take, or I'm going to really watch Martha Stewart and do what she's doing. I'm going to make that Christmas ornament.
Right.
And this is so exciting for us that we can do this.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. Well, I see that we only have a few minutes left, so I'm going to put the call into interactive mode so that will allow all of our guests to have a chance to speak up and ask a question. So I guess that means I'll say, listeners here, please, I'll be quiet. Speak up, ask a question.
Oh, some noise that, in the background, that sounds like. This is Suzanne. You know, I think you can put it on 8-8, Anne, and then I can unmute with star 7.
Okay.
Now the voice went away.
All right.
Okay. It's okay now. Sounded like there was a conversation or something. This is Suzanne.
Hi, Suzanne.
I really appreciate the fact that you value your faith, because I've just been so disturbed by seeing so many people that are in the limelight changing their faces so much that you can hardly recognize them.
Mm-hmm.
And I
it's
think
scary.
It's very, very sad.
And it's scary.
And it's almost like, wow, you know, do we have to do that to maintain our credibility in the world? Can we not look like an older woman and still be respected and effective, you know? So I think that you and others like you are leading the way for us to be able to be ourselves. And
that is the nicest thing I've ever heard, honestly. Because that's exactly what I want to do, is sort of be a leader in this, not giving in to what you know, the media tells us we have to look like or be like, and to show that, oh, I'm so pleased you said that. I love how you said it. I wish I'd been able to take, oh, I can listen to the tape.
Yep, we'll have a recording. You can listen.
Good. Thank you, Suzanne.
Anyone else?
And one more thing I want to say about that, too, is about our society. And I dream about a time that our women will have the respect as, what do they call them, sages or, yeah.
The wise women.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The wise women that mm-hmm. some other cultures really have set women up as, you know, someone very important. And for some reason, our culture has kind of gotten weird about that, and you know, we're not even allowed to look old, much less be revered for our wisdom. So it's kind of something I see changing, and I hope it happens sooner than later.
I agree.
Excellent. Anyone else? Well, I have a couple of calls here that people have typed in, questions that people have typed in. One is from Mary in Los Angeles. She says, I have always worked at home as a children's author and mom. My husband recently retired and is only 59. Oh, my, we are near each other so much. We do not have financial troubles. I adore him terribly, but he is home all the time. Any suggestions to help?
Oh, boy, that's rough, isn't it? I mean, so I have friends who sort of started, the husband started telling them how to load the dishwasher, you know, all of a sudden. And they sort of tried to get their husbands involved in hobbies like golf or or why don't you start joining the city council or something? Because I think if you get them a hobby that gets them out, or even go to the gym, or go take a run every morning, or get them in a sport, because no matter how much you love them, you're right, being together is so hard.
Absolutely. We have a couple more questions along that order from the people that typed them in. One is from Tina in Los Angeles. Actually, it's Tina Turbin who will be our
next
guest
time.
Next week.
Yeah.
So she said, I decided to start my career after my children grew up. This has revived me as a person, wife, woman, and mother. There are so many women that have no dream in life after momhood, as I call it. Please let me know your views on the importance of having personal goals at this phase in life for many women. Thank you.
Of course, I think that's the most important thing we can do. I mean, I think by changing your shoes, I mean, I literally say that you if you don't, I mean, you're just rolling over, and you're not going to have any fun. But by finding this passion, and I am convinced that every woman knows deep inside her what it is that she, when she was young, she loved to do, whether it was, you know, decorate or make clothes, or there's something that, and I think it's when you're young that you love this, and then it's sort of rubbed out of you when you go to school and when you have to work, and I think if we just listen to that, all of us, and feel it inside of ourselves, we'll know what it is, and we'll follow that passion and be happy, and it can be such, you know, it can be putting up wallpaper. It doesn't matter what it is, and it's so different for each one of us, but it's just listening and remembering when you were young.
All right. Anyone else?
There's someone, but I can't. He's going funny.
Yes, I couldn't hear that either.
Yeah, I think I heard that earlier, too. It keeps seeming to do that.
Okay. Well, I've got two more questions that were sent in, but I know that we're kind of at the end of our time here. So.
Right.
Do you have time for any more, or shall we?
Well, why don't we do one more, because I have to go back into New York.
Okay. Let's see. Is there anything different in the advice that you would give to married women who are aging that would be different from what the advice that you would give to single women?
Well, certainly the married woman is going to have to deal with having, you know, I think when you're single, you've gotten used to being alone. And I don't mean this, and I mean alone to me is silence and is a wonderful thing, where married women are going to have to deal with having their aloneness go away when that person retires and they retire. So I think there's going to be more to deal with that way. I think if you've been single your whole life, you've probably figured things out better as you've gone along, because it's got to have been hard for you when all your friends were married and having children. But you worked, it seems to me, women, my friends who've been single, have worked that out. And they seem, at this point in life, to be doing quite well, I think.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Tina, it's been great talking with you.
Thank you, Anne. I've loved talking to you, too. And I just love being on this. And it just, I'm so glad I'm in helping baby boomers in any way I can.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So we thank you for your time, and have a safe trip back to
thank
New
you.
York.
Thank you. And bye changing shoes. You'll
Goodbye.
Love it.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. All right. Tina Turbin, if you are on the call, you are the third question that I received. So I will get back to you. I do have your address already, so I don't need to get your address for the book. Thank you, everyone. And I appreciate your time on the call. Goodbye. Talk to us next week.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.